It's time to Talk It Over, starring Diane Diamond, Lee J. Berman, and Louise Palanker. Give us a call at 888-531-7171. Email us at talkitover@gmail.com. Join us online at talkitoverradio.com. Because we're ready to talk it over.
Welcome to Talk It Over, the show about conflict and resolution and all the cool stuff that happens in between. In Los Angeles, I am Louise Palanker, show co-host and nosy student of human behavior, at least according to my business cards. In New York, we have intrepid journalistic reporting phenom, Diane Diamond.
Hey, hey, here, my dear, ready to talk it over.
Wonderful. And here with me in L.A., as always, is our resident mediation superhero, Lee J. Berman.
I'm ready to mediate some conflict.
Wonderful. He's even wearing a cape. That's how super he is. He's very dashing. We are solving the world's problems two people at a time. So let's start with the big, wide world's problems. What is going on in the news, Diane? And for the love of God, how can we help?
Well, God, it's funny you should mention God. Have you heard about this story in Texas? It's unbelievable. There's this Church of the Latter-day something or another's there in a remote area in Texas, and authorities went in to this religious compound, and they removed 416 kids. They say they were acting on a tip from a 16-year-old girl who called them and said in a whispery voice, you know, I was married off to somebody and he raped me and I'm pregnant. And they went in and they literally confiscated these 400 kids. And then a bunch of other women went with them to take care of them. And it turns out that maybe girls maybe as young as 13 and 14 years old were being married off illegally, I might say. It's not legal in the state of Texas. And forced to have children. Now they really have to literally reprogram all these kids because they think the outside world is immoral and is out to get them. So how are they going to do that?
Wow, that's a tall order.
you said a mouthful, Louise. Yeah, it is a tall order.
The story is just shocking. We know it goes on. We hear about it. And we see it, but just on such a grand scale of this sort of abomination of child rearing and really brainwashing it, it's just frightful. I wouldn't know where to begin. Of course, they're going to need a lot of therapy and a lot of love and care. What do you have to say, Lee J?
Boy, it's really hard to mediate when you're dealing with people's value systems. You know, if you're dealing with resources, that's easy. If you're dealing with resources that they're deeply emotionally attached to, you can get into that and do some good work. But boy, when you're dealing with people's value systems that are just as diametrically opposed as the state government trying to take care of these kids and having a duty and a charge and an obligation to do so, and then you have this church who has a very different opinion about how these kids care should go, that's a very, very difficult conversation.
But is this value system, or is this the point of just being brainwashed and being cult members where, you know, everything is twisted upon itself and the healthy is unhealthy and vice versa? It's not a value system. It goes beyond that. It's really a very twisted, abusive crime. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, that's just it. You're both absolutely right. It legally, it's crime. You've got the government who says if you're under the age of 18 in Texas, you can't get married unless you have parental consent. Diane, I think you said it was if they're 16 or 17, they can obtain parental consent.
Right. So, and in other words, any marriage of any person under the age of 16 isn't recognized in Texas.
Right. And so basically what you have is statutory rape, and you have the government obligation to protect the public and go in and make sure that's not happening. Now, technically, legally, they're supposed to make sure it's not happening on a case-by-case basis. It's hard to sort of take a whole community and lump them together, even though we know that this is their fundamental belief. That's right. Going to take some unentangling and some time to figure out what's going on. And that, I think, was what the authorities are wrestling with right now.
Is it really deep programming at this point, then?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I mean, you're right. It's a deep programming that's so much deeper than a value system. But it is the value system in the sense that they're being told that the police are there to hurt them. And they're being told that the outside world is going to do things to them that we all know that the outside world doesn't necessarily do. So it is unlearning a lot of that and their view of the world.
Yeah. Can you imagine, even though that's the way they're trained, this one 16-year-old girl apparently got a cell phone and had enough gumption to call and say, please help me. She called a local shelter. But Lee J, my question to you is, you know, the sheriff's department, I watched all the news conferences with the sheriff's department, and they said, you know, we'd been going into the compound periodically and talking to them, and they assured us there were only, 150, 200 people there. You know, we didn't have any cause for concern. They tried, I guess what I'm saying, they tried to talk it over with these people, but they weren't getting through. How do you, in mediation, talk it over with somebody who has such a completely different mindset than you?
Well, to begin with, it's easier for me as a neutral person to go into that environment. When the police come in, they have an agenda. They're seen by the group as the bad guys, and that they're just there to disband us and take us all away. So the police aren't going to get real information from these people, and vice versa. The police are there trying to do their job and trying to help protect the people who are in there who need protecting, the young kids and so on. And those people are going to stonewall them because they know what their agenda is. So they're not going to talk honestly to each other. That's the benefit of having a neutral third person between them. Because my goal in sitting and this is something that may rub some people the wrong way, but my goal in sitting with them would be to sit with the members of the Fundamentalist Church of Jesus Christ Latter-day Saints and say, I want to help you do what you're trying to do here, which is to create a neighborhood in the name of God, but I want to help you do it in a way that doesn't have the police come knocking at your door all the time. I want to have you doing it in a way that abides by the laws that they're charged to uphold and still accomplish your goal. Now, that's a goal that the police don't necessarily have. And I'm going to sit with the police and say, look, I know you'd love just to level the place and scatter these people off and, you know, all to far lands so that they're not under your nose and all together like this in a commune, if you will. But ultimately, your charge is to help get the kids out of there. So I want to work with you to help accomplish your goal, which is to get out the young kids who are being attacked and statutorily raped under the circumstances and not have you overreaching in a way that's going to make it so that a court throws out whatever you find in there. So
yeah, I wish somebody would go and talk to the men of this sect because, you know, the local reporters, me with my reporter brain, I'm noticing this. Local reporters are saying where these women and children are being held. And if these men of the church are as zealot, mm-hmm. full of zealotness, is that even a word? They may go and try to attack and get them out. And, it just seems scary. Anyway, something to talk over there in Texas. If you all have a problem and you want to call us here, get some free mediation advice from none other than Lee J. Berman, give us a call at Talk It Over, 888-531-7171, 888-531-7171, or you could just email us at talkitover@gmail.com.
All right, Matt, who have we got on the phone?
We've got Roger on the line. Hello, Roger.
Hi, hey, how Roger. Are you?
Good. What's your problem, Roger?
Well, my problem is I've been playing tennis every Sunday morning for the last 26 years with an individual that I have a lot of respect for and I like. His profession was a business consultant. He was a partner in a large CPA firm. And he retired about 3 years ago, and I thought that after we played fairly equally over the years, that here he retired, he's going to have a lot more time to practice, and so I thought that his game would advance. But instead of that, I started beating him more and more to where it has not been competitive at all recently, and couldn't figure out what was happening. And then he went on a trip. And there was hiking involved, and he fainted, and he was out of the country, and they brought him back and took a bunch of tests.
Oh, my. Sounds like he might be sick, Roger.
Well,
is he ill?
He's got Parkinson's disease, is what they found out in the last year and a half or so. And he's doing everything he can, and he's taking physical therapy, and it's not advancing quickly, fortunately. But naturally, his game has gone way down, but I'm still playing every Sunday with him. And I can't bring myself to say no. And on the other hand, I only have a certain amount of time to play tennis, and so it's like not doing anything for my game. In fact, it's probably bringing it down. But over the years, he gave me advice in my business, which was helpful. So it's just been a difficult decision to make, whether I just keep playing with him until he just can't play anymore. He's said to me a few times, you know, he knows it's not competitive, and he would understand if I wanted to stop our game.
Roger, this is Lee J. Let me jump in for just a minute here. Are we talking about tennis?
We're talking about tennis.
Are you sure? Because one of the things that I'm hearing is that the reason you don't want to have the conversation with him about the tennis is because he's not well, and because he's given you advice in the past and things. And it sounds to me like, let me just ask you this straight out. Have you talked to him about the Parkinson's?
Oh, yes.
And tell me about those conversations. Have you talked at length about it and so on? Or?
Well, not at length, only to the point where when he first told me he had it, and he said that, you know, he was going, he had to go to 3 or 4 different doctors before they finally figured out what he had.
Oh, that's hard. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Let me ask you, this is what I do with people when they're going through something similar, where it's a moral dilemma. If you woke up tomorrow morning and you knew that today you had told him you couldn't play with him, how are you feeling tomorrow morning when you wake up? Are you okay? Or is the guilt of that decision going to be more uncomfortable than the weekly tennis match?
So far, I would say the guilt would be more to deal with than having to play with him without it being any competition at all.
Would he be uncomfortable with you, using the doubles? Him using the doubles lines, and you, in other words, he knows that he's ill. Would he be uncomfortable with you changing the rules a bit to make it more challenging for you?
I think he would rather, instead of playing games, rather just hit if it came to that.
I see. Roger, let me ask you this. Is it possible that you could substitute something else that might even be more attractive to him than playing tennis for that time? I mean, if you said to him, you know, that the tennis game is, you know, more of a hitting than a game, and I'm fine with that, really, but the truth is, I'd meet you here at the club once a week just to sit and have a sandwich and talk about life and things with you. Yeah, play cards or something that might even be more meaningful time to him if he's really, you know, looking at a downhill slide from here.
Well, I think that he treasures the time that he can still be on the court and still hit some shots over that, because it's not like he can't play at all. It's just that what the change has been that his reaction time is longer. So it takes him more time to realize to get his body moving to where the ball is.
Right, but he still enjoys playing.
He still can hit the ball fairly decently when he can get to it.
So, and you know, Roger, I hear you say your friend really cherishes that time, and I hear the struggle in your voice. You don't want to be the one to take that away from him or deny him that cherished time.
That's right, because I don't know who else would play with him if I stop.
So why don't you just keep playing with him?
That's what I've been doing, and that's what my gut has told me, and I think you're reinforcing that.
Well, I think you're a very good friend, Roger.
You're an amazing friend, and there's some things that we do in life that just make us feel good. They make us like ourselves, and I think you're not going to like yourself very, very well on that day that you have to tell him you don't want to play with him anymore.
And it sounds also like, Roger, this is something that you've been doing for yourself with him for many, many years. Now it's something that you're doing for him that may not be feeding your competitive desire and so on, but it's something that will leave you feeling really wonderful after you've done it each week.
It's feeding something more important, probably.
Yes. No, that's true. And it's also giving back, because
Yes.
There was times in my business life where I had some really rough periods, and he gave me a lot of help.
And I've got to believe he knows it, too.
Yeah, I'm sure.
Especially if he's mentioned to you about his game already. It sounds like he's really just saying, I appreciate the favor you're doing for me, and I'll appreciate it as long as you're willing to continue it.
And you know what's interesting is that the difference between men and women is that women would just get together. Well, let's just meet and we'll sit and we'll talk. But men need to be active, and this is his way of bonding with you because you're guys and you've been doing this for 26 years, and he doesn't know how to say, hey, I just need to be around you, Roger. I'm married. I'm around women. My wife. I need to be around you. You're my buddy. But I don't know how to just sit and knit, so this is what we do. This is our thing, and he still needs it.
Yeah, you're absolutely right, because that's our way of interacting, because we kid about the game and about the shots and so on. And so I think you've reinforced what I felt anyway. So.
Good.
Well, Roger, thank you for calling Talk It Over, and if you decide that you want to have a conversation with him at some point in time, we'll be here.
I appreciate it.
And in the meantime, you're doing a really, really good thing.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks
for calling.
A lot. Boy, I hope when I get to be that age, I get a friend like that. Very interesting. Very nice call. Not so nice was in the news this week. We have time for me to do another little news item here.
Oh, yes, of course.
Okay, here we go. It's Heather Mills. What would this show be without a little celebrity news in it? Heather Mills, who was, of course, married to my personally favorite Beatle, Paul McCartney. He actually wanted to marry me, but we hadn't met yet. Anyway, she's in Las Vegas judging the Miss USA pageant. And apparently she's decided now is the perfect time to speak out about her divorce. And so the reporter who interviewed her asked her, you know, why in the world during the divorce proceedings did you take a jug of water and pour it over the head of Paul's lawyer, that female lawyer? And she said, oh, well, I just snapped. She said something under her breath, and she needed to be, this is a quote, she needed to be cleansed and baptized. Does it really help Heather Mills to behave this way, Lee J?
Is this on YouTube?
Probably. No, there were no cameras allowed.
She dumped a bucket of water on Paul's lawyer's head. And
yes.
What were the consequences?
Nothing. The lawyer had gone in with his big boofy blonde hairdo, and when she came out with Paul McCartney, you know, an hour later or so, her hair was like, she looked like a drowned chihuahua.
What a brat.
Yeah.
Well, your question, Diane, was is it helping her? And the answer is, of course not. I mean, at some point, she's got a judge and or a jury deciding what her outcome's going to be on the divorce and each stage that they're in front of with hearings and so on. And the thing that I notice is we forget sometimes that our actions are all sort of tabulated. And, you know, if you believe that God does that, that's one squaring up at the end of the line, but Heather Mills is going to have a squaring up each time she comes before the court, and if she's acting like a spoiled brat, she's going to be treated like a spoiled brat by the court in every chance they have an opportunity to do that. And we've all seen that as we sit in courtrooms, right, Diane? I mean, we've seen...
But what? She got like $50 million for being a brat.
Yeah.
I don't know how much she got, but I don't know. How do you mediate with somebody like that who's obviously so given to drama and so self-absorbed about herself?
What I do is I pull them out of the room away from everybody else, and I ask them a straight question. Have you noticed how the person that you're trying to make a deal with here has reacted to your behavior? And I first check in with them to see how self-aware they are. And usually they're fairly self-aware. Oh yeah, that probably wasn't a very smart thing to do. And I say, so help me understand again, you came here to get what? And I remind them what their goal is, what that carrot is that's dangling out in front of them. And in her case, it's $250 million.
Right.
And I'm going to say, now how coherent are your actions with what you're trying to accomplish?
So how many millions does each water dump cost her?
One. Yeah. One or two. So I guess you figured it was worth it.
It is very expensive. People have to understand that there are consequences to their actions. And when they're deeply swept up in emotions or they're high drama people, they don't have that connection going on, and they just need us to put it back together, the cause and effect together again for them.
Now, Louise, how come I thought I was expecting you to do a, well, she doesn't have a leg to stand on joke?
Because that would not have been fair.
That would not have been, that would have been too obvious,
yes,
right?
Yes, yes. Well, I used to, when he started going out with her, I used to say, well, most people would give an arm and a leg to date Paul McCartney, but she only had to give a leg.
Oh.
Never mind. Moving on with the program.
Moving on. Hey, I got an email from Steve in Manhattan, New York. Simple problem, he says. I can't stand my best friend's brother. He's a lug and a mooch, and my friend often asks him to tag along with us. We're in our 20s. We're not kids anymore. What do I say to my friend to make him realize he shouldn't have to drag his brother with us anymore?
Don't bring your stupid brother.
Your stupid smelly brother needs to stay at home.
Yeah.
I mean,
you gotta
that's
be direct.
What I'd say.
You got to be direct about stupid smelly brothers.
And you know, the only fallout from that could be that you could offend the buddy. You know, you don't know how the buddy's going to react to something like that. So that's a little bit risky. And a less risky way to do that is to say, hey, is it okay if you and I just hang out? I just want some one-on-one time with you now. Let's just have some guy time, you and me.
And now, wouldn't one of the guys say, what, are you gay?
No, I don't think so. No, if you ask the question right now. No. You know, if you say, you know, how about we hang out together, just you and me alone, you know, we have dinner.
With a bottle of Merlot.
Yeah. Then he
might get the wrong.
Exactly. Okay. You know, everything that you ask is in how
There's
you ask it, right?
Something low cut.
Yeah.
No,
is
but you
chest?
Know what? You know, we're
is
being.
Is that chest hair? Wow.
It's interesting. We were talking to Roger about his issues with a guy friend. And now we're talking about what's the emailer's name?
Steve in Manhattan.
Steve. And we're giving, you know, very callous sort of advice that we would never give to a woman if it involved her best friend and her best friend's sister. We'd never say, hey,
stupid,
just tell a stupid friend.
Sister, yeah.
We wouldn't.
We never
say.
Yeah.
We'd be more. Do you think about that in mediation, Lee J, the differences between men
of
and women?
Of course. But I find on the show there are two things that we have to be careful of. One, we treat all guys like they have thick skin and it's okay just to say, screw him, leave him home, you know, and like they're going to be okay with
yeah.
that.
Right.
And the other thing is we have sort of, I don't know how to say this without saying it wrong, but we have a tendency not to want to be too touchy-feely when giving guys advice about talking to guys because it might sound gay. And the truth is, it doesn't have to. I mean, I talk to guys all the time about important things because, you know, guys have buddies. And, you know, in your 20s, that's a different delivery than it is when you're in your 40s or your 50s.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, in your 40s or your 50s, you're more confident and you're more comfortable in your skin and you know who you are. And in your 20s, everybody's a little sort of wild, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's got to be delivered differently. But hey, in my 20s, I had a buddy who hung around with me. I grew up with him. He was like a cousin or a brother. And all of my friends couldn't stand him and said, hey,
and you knew it.
When you come to the party, look, you're invited. Only if you don't bring him, kind of a thing.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's
and
hard. What did you say to him? Or did you go to the party without him?
I don't remember the specific thing. I think I probably went and hung out with him because he was my buddy. And you know, frankly, if I get that they didn't like him. I get the things about him that made him abrasive. I chose to hang out with him because I was comfortable with him. But, you know, a good friend has a conversation with him, like I did once or twice, more indirectly about, you know, dude, you may just want to tone it down a little bit.
Yeah.
Sometimes you get a little loud when you have had a couple drinks or something, you know, that kind of conversation.
Because maybe this guy could say to his brother, look, you know, there's specific things that you do that tend to rub people the wrong way. And we'd get invited to more things if maybe you didn't, you know, burp as loud. I don't know.
Or as frequently. See, now, Louise, that's why you are the astute student of human nature that
you
are. I guess you really are right. We do talk and give advice differently to men and women. And Lee J, it's interesting that it actually gets into your mediation sessions, too.
Absolutely.
Hmm.
Yeah, it's
now
always
I'm gonna
there.
Think
it's always present.
Okay. Listen, if anybody has a problem like Steve's in Manhattan and wants to get in on our conversation here, give us a call, 888-531-7171.
Engineer Matt, who's on the phone?
We've got Lucas. He's got a conflict about buying a gift for a friend. Hello, Lucas.
Hey, Lucas.
Hey, how are you guys?
Good. How are you doing?
I'm doing okay.
What is going on in your life?
Well, I have a friend of mine who lives in a really wealthy family, and for Christmas and my birthday, she always gets me really, really, really expensive gifts.
Does she want to be my friend?
Yeah, or mine.
Okay. Oh, no, we're friends.
Okay.
But no, well, I'm actually kind of like her only really close friend at my school.
Uh-huh.
And I usually don't usually buy very expensive gifts for my friend because I have to buy them out of my own money. You know,
right.
I don't, like, have a, you know, like, daily job,
obviously. How old are you? How old are you?
I'm 16.
Okay, you're a kid. Okay, got it.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
And so I never know what to do because, you know, here she is, you know, like, buying me really expensive gifts, and then I feel terrible, like, accepting them because then I, you know, can't give that back in return. And so it just, it makes things really awkward, and I don't know if I should, how to handle this.
Is she buying, Lucas, is she buying them, or are her parents giving her the money? Where's the money coming from?
That's a good question. I think it's probably from her parents.
I think you could just probably say to her, I really appreciate these gifts, but I have to, I don't know if I can respond in kind exactly because, you know, my parents don't know. Do kids tell each other whether or not their parents are, but like when kids say, oh, I like your jeans or whatever, do kids say, oh yeah, you know, my dad has a really good job? I mean, how are kids with each other about money? Because it's such a sensitive thing, and yet it's a big thing. How direct are kids about how wealthy their families are?
I don't know. It really depends. The school that I go to is actually kind of in a more wealthy area, but then like the school itself is, but then there are a lot of, you know, kids like me that are, you know, kind of like on the other, you know, end of it. And so it's different. But I know, like, in my, you know, main group of friends, like, we just kind of, you know, like, go out to eat on a friend's birthday or something. You know, we don't even, like, do this whole big, you know, gift-giving thing. And so then it just makes it, I don't know, it's just, this is the first, you know, encounter I've had with a situation like this. So I don't really know.
It sounds like if she doesn't have a lot of friends, she really values your friendship, and she's trying to sort of pay for it, if, you know, not to sound crass, but that's what she's kind of trying to do.
Lucas,
no, yeah, and I think so. And I think it's because, I don't know, I think she's kind of spoiled also.
Mm-hmm.
So
Lucas,
I think that, like, that's what she's learned, you know?
Here's one of the things I'm hearing. It's entirely possible that what she's doing is really just normal to her. And she probably has no idea at all that you're uncomfortable or embarrassed about it and you know what you're feeling and what you're talking to us about. So one of the things you can do the next time she does this is say, you know, you really don't have to do this. It almost makes me a little uncomfortable because I can't reciprocate the same way. And, you know, in my family, we didn't give gifts that were this, you know, and then fill in the word you want to use to describe them. But my sense is that if you treat the conversation not like one that's really going to be uncomfortable, but instead that she just doesn't know and you're trying to help her understand, it'll be easier for you to talk to her. Does that make sense?
Yeah, that does make a lot of sense.
Another thing that's really cool to do, and I think is just as special, or probably even more special, or something that she would keep even longer, would be if you made her a really cool card.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and spent as much time and put as much love into it, you know, as would be the equivalent of buying someone, an expensive present. I think she'll hold on to that and have that for many, many years to come, whereas something that she would buy you, like an iPod, you know, might be obsolete within 5 years.
Yeah. No, and I mean, usually that's, you know, like what, you know, I do, especially, you know, in my family and with my friends. And so then it's just hard because, you know, like if I try to do something like that. But I don't know, I feel uncomfortable, so I don't know if I should just, you know.
No, that's that's the key. That's your barometer right there. It's not so much about the gift itself, it's really about how you feel about it. And what I'm hearing is that you're feeling uncomfortable, and she just needs to hear that from you in a way that helps her understand. And, you know, she might say, hey, don't even think twice about it. I'm happy to do it. It makes me feel good, and I don't want you to take that away from me. Or she may say, oh gosh, I had no idea. But you'll get a response from her that tells you how she's feeling, and it'll bring you closer as friends once you've had that discussion.
Yeah, okay. And I think Lucas probably just doesn't want the gravy train to end there. That's why he hasn't been talking to her about this, right, Lucas? Anyway, talk to her, and then call us back and tell us what her reaction was, because I think Lee J might be right. She just doesn't even figure that this isn't normal.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Okay.
So, all right, give us a call back, would you?
I will. I'll do that.
Thanks for calling Talk It Over, Lucas.
Thank you, Lucas. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Hey, do you ever travel on mediations, Lee J? I mean, I know you do, but far away will you go to travel?
Well, I
far.
Louise is laughing at me because this summer I was in Dubai and Amsterdam, and I'm going back to Dubai again in a couple of months. But I did a 4-day mediation in Denver, and I'm based in LA, so that was an out of towner for me, if you will.
So Oregon would not be, the state of Oregon would not be too far for you to travel.
Definitely not. I have a brother there, and I think they could use some help up there.
Well, they can. Yeah. They can indeed, because I read that in the state of Oregon, they have passed a law that anybody who holds office, you know, like a city commissioner or a county councilor or whatever they are, they have to fill out a financial disclosure form. It's a new law, but it's coming due now. And there are, let me see, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 different communities all around Oregon where the elected officials are saying, hey, I don't need this. I don't have to start revealing to you what my income is and where it comes from. I'm out of here. And there are some communities that now they have nobody to run the place. Seems like they need a mediator up there.
Why would people just pick up and leave before they would fill out? Are these mostly volunteer positions? Are these smaller towns? Because people are going to pick up and leave before they would fill out a simple form?
My understanding is it's every elected official in the state.
Mm-hmm.
And yes. That the governor has ordered it. And here's what's happened. As I see it as a mediator, the governor says that Oregonians are entitled to an open government. So what he did was... he said, therefore, everything is going to be transparent. Well, that's not the only way to meet his goal of having an open government, but it's the way he decided. And so everybody else said, well, if that's the decision and we're not going to talk about this, you're leaving us no choice but to opt out. Sorry, we all resign all at the same time.
Yeah, you run the place.
So it's
then.
A matter of
right.
principle?
Well, no, it's a matter of discussing it. They have to talk it over. What they have to do, first of all, the worst thing that senior leaders, whether they're governors of states or CEOs of company can do is make a rule without talking to people first, because he thought he was solving a problem here,
like,
but really what he was
Act.
Doing, you'll have to fill me in later.
Well, it's how our country began.
Okay.
King George didn't talk that over with us.
Right. Oh, definitely not.
Okay.
No.
Go ahead.
So what has to happen is he has to say to a group of leaders, a team, he has to say, I want us to have a more open government. How can we do that? But most leaders are afraid to ask the open-ended question. What they would have said is, tell us what you mean. And he would have said, I want to avoid conflicts of interest and the appearance that we're, you know, lining our mm-hmm. own pockets. And the answers are so much easier when he defines the problem that way, because they could very easily just have laws that say on every bill or every action that you take, you have to disclose about that action. If there's anybody affected by the bill that you have an investment in. For example, as a mediator, mm-hmm. I have to disclose before mediation if I've had any contact ever before with any of the people at the table, if I have any financial relationship with them or anything like that. But I don't have to disclose that about everybody I know before I do a mediation between John and Mary. I just have to disclose it about John and Mary. So what I'm saying is there are different ways to fix the problem, but he didn't ask for help. He just said, this is how I want it done. Mm-hmm. And so...
And it's pretty wide sweeping. It's even, yes. you know, not just you, the office holder, but it's also your spouse and any
yeah.
of your children that are over 18, any of the business things they're involved with. So, see, they should have called Talk It Over, right? They
exactly.
should have called us at
888-531-7171. Yes, so many people wow. should.
What was that number again, Diane?
That number, once again, is 888-531-7171. Or look, you listeners, you can always just send us an email and we will address it maybe later in this broadcast or next week. talkitover@gmail.com.
It would alleviate so many problems if people would just
yes.
call us first.
Like,
well, you know,
Christopher.
We do have... Oh. We do have another email here.
Well, Christopher's on the phone, Diane.
Oh, Christopher. Oh,
yes.
I had no idea.
Yes.
Christopher?
Go, Chris.
Yes, this is Christopher.
Hi, Christopher. How can we help
Hi.
You? Thank you for calling Talk It Over.
Well, I'm in a relationship, actually a pretty committed relationship, with a woman who at many times or half the time feels like my true soulmate. But the problem is she suffers from a very severe mental, like, personality disorder. So...
Oh.
During those times in which this thing takes over, it's an absolute nightmare, and my choice is to either walk away or stay in it. And if I stay in it, eventually I'm forced to react, because this disorder ends up in some really violent behavior and violent verbal abuse, And I end up reacting, and it ends up just being a real nightmare, and the relationship becomes over, and then she becomes herself again, and here's the same circle of me feeling that, okay, that wasn't her, so let's get to the true, you know, the true spirit of who she is so she can conquer this thing, but there's no conquering.
What's okay. the nature of the disorder?
Borderline personality disorder.
I see. Oh, and does medication help that at all?
Well, in order for medication to help you, you've got to take it as directed. And part of the problem with borderline personality disorder is nobody being able to tell you what to do. So if you're not doing what you're supposed to be doing, and then whether it's a psychiatrist or a loved one who tells you what you're supposed to be doing, you tend to react. And the problem is that the person who gets the brunt of everything is the person that they love most, because usually it's brought about by severe childhood trauma, so they learn not to trust the person who they're supposed to love the most. You know?
So, Christopher, this is Lee J. Christopher. Let me turn it around for a minute. Let me ask you. You've lived with this for a while. I'm going to bet that you know what the answer is.
Well, I'll tell you, every time I think I know what the answer is, mm-hmm. like the answer is, okay, I'm a good person. I need to take care of myself. I'm not responsible for this person. It's not working. I've got to bow out. And every time I bow out, I'm unable to take that final step. The other day, I was, it was over. You know, I felt that. I was staying someplace else, and the movie The Exorcist was on. You know, I just happened to click to the channels, and The Exorcist was on. And it was that scene where Ellen Burstyn goes, standing around all the doctors go, can't you help her? Just please help her.
Yeah.
And that's just kind of the way I felt, you know. It's just the thing is that every time I try to walk away, there's something that's I'm not able to take that step and actually leave her.
I hear you. So the extreme answer of leaving the relationship isn't working because there's something that's so powerful that you want to be in that with her, in that relationship with her.
Yeah.
That means you're going
to... If I find myself, you know, I separated from her, you know, to kind of get some abstinence going mm-hmm. so then I can get a little taste of reality of what... And, you know, you would think that if this is a relationship I'd want to leave, there's other women in my life or something, but I'm not out for any of that. And when I think of things or think of a life with somebody, it's always... You know, with her. And
okay, so what you have to do then is you have to talk it over with her. You've got to sit her down and explain to her how bad the problem is, and she obviously knows that you've tried to leave, but she needs to understand that it's getting intolerable for you, and you don't want it to become intolerable, that what you really want is to be with her, and what you really need to do is tackle this problem, not for her, and not help her tackle it, but that you've got to tackle it together, and you've got to make this a thing that she has her life and her ups and downs and her problems, and you have your life in dealing with that and everything else that your life encompasses. But this part, your relationship part, that's something that you do together. It's an us thing. It's a we thing. And that way, when you say to her, here's where I think we're having an issue today, then it's not like you're telling her what to do or to take her meds. You're doing it hand in hand together, and it's a partnership, and she's not going to be as reactive to that. Does that sound like something that'd be possible?
Well, it's not only possible, but that has worked for, you see, everything works for a short period of time.
Mm-hmm.
And the nature of this thing, and I don't know how much you know about borderline, but I guess the recovery rate is very minimal.
Yeah,
And the nature of this thing is this stuff crops back up, and I guess my situation is, I guess I need to decide, if I go back to this thing, am I going to just be resolved to realize that I'm just going to be a caretaker for the rest of my life?
Christopher, can we talk about the elephant in the room that no one's talking about here? Because yeah. I hear it in your voice. You love this woman.
Yes, I do.
Yeah, I can hear that you do. I think that Lee J's advice is really good, to sit down and hold her hand and say, look, I'm willing to do this together, but you can't push me away and then expect that I'm always going to still be here. But I have a friend who has borderline personality disorder. And you know what? It took her forever to find the right doctor. Has the woman you love gone to enough doctors, do you think? Is that maybe something that would help? To find another one?
At this stage, it has to be her that finds it, because when I find it, anything goes wrong, then I'm the one that's automatically blamed. That's part of the nature of that disorder. So right. There's been many wonderful times where we've sat down together and we've both had hope, and she's you know, she cries about the garbage that's in her head and she doesn't understand, and that's what she calls it. She doesn't understand where that stuff comes out, and I have hope that this is all going in the right direction. And then, you know, I forget to take my shoes off when I walk in the door on the hardwood floors, and the reaction I get is the same reaction as if I was that person giving her the abuse when she was a child. And it's insane reaction, and it's insane verbal abuse that can't be repeated on the. You understand what I'm saying?
Yeah, Christopher.
Yes, I do. Do you think it's time to just walk away?
Well, I've been trying.
It'll hurt, but maybe that's the only thing left to do.
That's pretty much, you know, where I'm at, and I just don't understand why I can't just cut that umbilical cord and walk away. There's something.
And Christopher, here's what I'm hearing. This is Lee J. Let me jump in. You're making this phone call and this problem all about her, and I haven't heard enough about you. What I'm hearing in this, as I listen to it, is you're stuck in a situation. Let's leave her out of this for a moment. You're stuck in a situation that's untenable. You're unable to leave. You're willing to consider being a caretaker for the rest of your life, which at this point you already have been. I would think that at this point, I'd be more concerned, if I were you, with what is it about you that makes you want to be in a relationship where you have to be a caretaker and unable to leave it, when you're telling us that it gets untenable, that it's completely abusive at times, unpredictably so. And if you look in the mirror and leave her out of the picture, that's the conversation, the difficult conversation, the talking it over part that I want you to do is with yourself. And what is it that's making you feel the need to be in this kind of relationship, and maybe talking to somebody else about that too?
And what is there in your personal history that you think may have led to you feeling like this is what you deserve, or the best that there's going to be for you? Because I don't see this as something that's going to be healthy for you ever. And I'm wondering why. I know you love her, and I'm sure there's a lot of wonderful, lovable qualities about her. But what is there that has happened to you before this relationship that would maybe have you believing your inner voice telling you that this is the right relationship for you, or the one that you deserve?
Yeah, you know what? That's the thing that you said and the thing that he said before that, that's the stuff that is the most true to the bone right now. What I've been working on is, like, there's what in me is, like, whatever I was raised with that makes me feel maybe guilty that I was fortunate to be raised with stuff that maybe she wasn't, and why do I have the need or why do I feel responsible?
Christopher, you just hit it right on the head. I want you to stop for a minute and just hear what you just said again, because it was so important. You just answered the question. I want you to hear what you said. What I heard you say was, because of the way I was raised, I feel guilty, and I feel the need to help here. The one thing that it's possible that your upbringing didn't give you is permission to say, I deserve better than this for myself, and it's okay for me to let her live her life without me. She'll be okay. I wish I could go back and replay it for you again, because you just answered your own question.
Can you picture children in this situation hearing her open up a mouth at you? Can you picture it? What sort of life is there?
Actually, the interesting part about that is that when this is a woman that I was with when we were in our early 20s, and I didn't see her for 18 years, and we were both married and divorced since then. She came back.
Oh, okay.
And, you know, it was in our early 20s, it was the wonderful wild fling of the early 80s. But now, it's, you know, I'm not the same person, obviously. And you know, the one thing about children, though, is that she raised her her sister's kid, because her sister ended up going to prison when her sister's kid was 4 years old, and she raised her sister's kid, and this kid is like, I mean, her whole family is whacked out, you know. But this kid, I don't know if you guys remember the show The Munsters, the 70s show The Munsters, this kid is like the Marilyn of that family, because she, something about what she did when she raised this kid, she made sure that he was going to not have the same problem that her and the rest of her siblings had. And she really did a great job, and that really, and I saw that because the kid worked for me and everything. He's an incredible kid for 21 years old.
So, Christopher, I want to interrupt you for just a minute, because you're doing a beautiful job of deflecting right now. I want you to hear how far you've gone from the issue that you called us to talk about, and how difficult it is for you to have this conversation right now.
Yeah.
And I hear it in your voice, and I know how hard it is. It doesn't have to be something you do right away overnight, but it's something that you need to understand why you do it when you do it.
And you know, Christopher, we have a chat room going at the same time, and they're listening to this broadcast, and one of the chatters has said exactly what Lee J is saying. Jay Spoons writes that he thinks you're just asking for some sort of permission to be able to leave, when in fact, as Lee J says, you have to give yourself that permission.
Right.
It doesn't make you a bad person in anybody's mind.
You don't deserve to be yelled at for no reason. You don't deserve that. That's toxic.
Yeah, that I agree. It is toxic. And of course,
will
you
let us know what happens?
I'm not just the nice guy that takes it, though.
No,
I
know.
When I get in the ring, I do react. I know.
And that's not good either, because then you don't like how you turn in that moment either.
Yeah, then you don't. Yeah, exactly. You don't like who you are in that moment.
Because she brings out something in you that you don't want to have brought out.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Christopher, be strong. Diane will tell you when we're done that you can go to our website and hear this again. And I think it would do you a lot of good to listen to it again, just to hear what you sound like. Because I want you to reflect on you and not worry so much about her right now.
Okay.
Thank you for calling.
Thank you, guys.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Oh, right. Be strong. I hope he can be. Lee J, that was very good advice. And I was thinking, as he was talking about the young person that this woman raised, what does this have to do with anything?
Yeah.
I mean, he's struggling to find the goodness there. And I'm sure there is goodness there, but he deserves a life.
You know, Diane, you sometimes ask at the end of some of these news stories, are there some times, Lee J, where you just can't talk it over? And I'm biased, because as a mediator, I always think that there's a way to talk it over. It's just finding the right combination. And in this one, it may not be him talking it over with her. It may be a different form of conversation. And I think that's the one he's going to have next. I hope so.
I've been around people with borderline personality disorder. And, you know, just among us kids, I can say that it sounds shallow to say it, but there is no reasoning with them. They don't hear reason. They don't know how to hear it. And there are certain things that we just can't fix, and that we shouldn't have to.
Yeah.
We shouldn't have to.
And one of the things I'd like to do before we go on to the next call or email is just to say to everyone who's listening out there who's in a relationship that may not be as extreme as a borderline personality, but that may be the kind that leaves you scratching your head saying, what the heck am I doing in this relationship? I've got to leave, and then back in love with them again 2 days later. This isn't normal.
At that point, I wonder, what is love? Is it what we define as love, or is it something deeper and way beyond what you're experiencing that you think is love?
Yeah, I want everybody who's in a relationship like that and listening to this show to follow the same advice we gave Christopher and spend some time looking in the mirror and less time looking at your partner. A friend of mine said to me once, I can tell anything about a person if you show me the person they're dating. And I think if you look in the mirror and think about who you've chosen to date and how that life is that you've chosen with that person, that says more about how your self-esteem is and what you think about yourself than almost anything. It's more honest than almost anything that you think you could say about yourself.
And what you're calling love could be guilt, obligation, fear of being alone. It could be a lot of different things that disguise themselves as love, but not true, pure love.
You know, we have fabulous people in the chat room. This is causing quite a chat off air. I wish we could do both and read everything. But Jay Spoons brings up the question of where is this woman's family? And, you know, Jay Spoons, that's a good question. We maybe should have asked that of Christopher, but he had a more pressing need. I would venture to say that her family, well, one sister's in prison. The rest of them probably took off because they know I don't deserve to be treated like this. And Christopher just hasn't gotten to that point.
Right.
Yeah.
Boundaries are a hard thing
to
draw.
Yeah. I'm sure glad he called in. Mm-hmm. Well, let's lighten things up a little bit with an email, shall we? Susan from Glen Burnie, Maryland writes in. She says she loves all of her neighbors. Loves them. she says all the women in the hood are very close to each other. The problem is one particular woman who constantly is having some party or another, inviting the rest of us to come buy something. Last night it was designer candles. Before that it was gourmet kitchen utensils. Then Christmas wrapping paper and bows. I feel so pressured to buy! ! How can I sit her down, talk it over, and get myself excused from these events?
You're busy. You're busy. Yeah. I don't go to those buy something parties.
How about caller IDs?
Well, you all know I teach mediation and negotiation skills in addition to mediation skills. I was teaching a negotiation course in Battle Creek, Michigan this past winter.
And you were eating cornflakes, right? The home
exactly.
Of Battle Creek, Michigan.
Exactly. And we're teaching a course about influence. And one of the ways you influence people is inviting them to parties like this because they feel beholden to their friend to buy something. Obviously not in a situation like this where it's abused and it's every week or two. But we're telling the story and we say to the room full of 40 insurance adjusters, have any of you ever been to a party like this? And this one girl who's real outgoing pops her hand up. And we said, okay, great. Well, let me ask you this. Did you buy something at that party? And she says, yeah, I did. And we said, well, did you buy anything that you didn't need just because she was your friend? And she said, yeah, I really did. And we said, did you use the things that you bought? And she says, no, not all of them yet. And so the guy who's teaching with me says, well, what kind of a party was it? And it turns out it was a sex toy party.
Oh,
and this girl in front of 40 of her coworkers is and she proudly going on, blushing and going on with the line of questioning. It was hysterical.
I just haven't used the vibrator yet. I'm waiting to get the right batteries.
I never get invited to parties like that.
Well, all right.
None of my neighbors have that.
So Susan's question is, how does she talk it over with her and get herself excused?
Yeah.
And she really has to just say that. You know, I don't mind coming over once in a while, but it's getting to be a bit much. And I just want to be friends with you. I want to, you know, have a cup of coffee. I want to go out to a movie with you. I don't want to come over and be asked to buy something every time I see you, because that's become too dominant a piece of our relationship for me.
I think that's a perfect one to just be very direct. There shouldn't be any feelings hurt in that encounter with just, I really don't want to come to another party where it's going to basically be salesmanship rather than socialization.
Yeah.
I want to socialize with you.
Did you bring your checkbook? Yeah, exactly.
I want to socialize with you. I don't want to necessarily have, you know, we're on a, I don't know if you want to say we're on a tight budget this month or...
Well,
but I don't really think there's I don't think there's any wrong answer to how you decline that invitation.
Well, I have been to one of those designer candle parties recently. That must be the new Tupperware. I don't know.
Yeah.
And you really do. You know what happens? It's after work and you go in and they give you some wine,
mm-hmm.
and the candles are all over and they're lit and it smells so good and you think, ooh, I want this for my house.
Yes.
Well, my house is just fine without all the stinky candles, but of course I bought them anyway. So I know exactly what Susan,
have you used
Susan
them?
Is saying. But
have you used them?
You know what? I haven't gotten them yet, actually. It takes like 3 weeks for delivery or something.
Forget
it. Yeah, I'll use them.
Let's just get together and go to the mall. This is ridiculous.
Yeah, go get a burger, you know, just have the wine. Forget the buying stuff. That's what I say.
The last thing for Susan, though, that I've got to toss in here is, it's not a friendly invitation. It's a request. And there's a big difference between a friend saying, hey, come on over for a party, and a request that says, would you come? They call it a party as a euphemism, mm-hmm. but they're basically saying, would you come to my sales pitch and would you buy something? It's easier to say no if you think of it as a request than as a friendly invitation.
But I think you should be able to say no to both.
Yes, of course.
I'm busy.
Of course.
Yeah, yeah. No, I'm busy. I don't know. For me, wherever there's wine, it's a party. Okay, so one more email from Meg from Indianapolis, Indiana. She says, we're a big and close family. Someone's always having the rest of us over for birthdays, anniversaries, first communion, some such. The conflict comes because Uncle Roscoe can't keep his hands off us women.
Ooh.
He's a sad and lonely widower, and I don't want to be rude, but I also don't want his hand on my butt again. Do I talk it over with him by myself, or should all the girls gang up on him to show him we're really serious? Ooh, Meg, I would not want to be in your place.
Wow, that's tricky. How old is Uncle Roscoe, does it say?
Well, she doesn't say, but I don't think many people are naming their kid Roscoe these days. It's sort of like Adolf, you know. Nobody's
70.
Calling their kid Adolf yeah. anymore.
Unhand me, you cad. Is that something that's still said?
You know,
stop being fresh.
Ironically, you could say those things. I mean, you could say in a very lighthearted, dramatic sort of way with an accent that's funny,
what?
Unhand me, you cad, and remove his hand from your ass and say, you know, I, and let him get the hint that way. But he may not take it seriously. So that's a mild intervention. Her right. question is, should we all gang up on him? And we're usually in the workplace, we say, don't fly solo, have some wing people by your side to back you up. So you're not saying all of us feel and you're standing there by yourself. In this case, he's an older guy. She doesn't need any help. She can look at him and say, Uncle Roscoe, that's really not okay. You know that.
And, oh, and that's good language. I like that. What was that now? That's really
Uncle
not
Roscoe,
okay.
That's
comma.
Really not
okay.
That's
Roscoe,
really
comma.
Not okay. You know that.
You know, I have a theory about Uncle Roscoe, and this is something that goes beyond Uncle Roscoe. I think guys like this have been doing this forever. And they get yeah. away with it. You don't suddenly become a dirty old man. You've been groping women. I've been in the workplace, and I've been groped. And I think there are guys that just know how to do it. And they don't stop unless someone tells them to stop.
Exactly.
So by all means, tell him to stop.
But in my experience, from what the story, I've never been groped. But from what I've been told, once
I'm
you
sorry.
Tell
Diane,
once,
get over here.
Once you
yeah,
tell them, on. Once you tell them, they stop. That's what
they
I hear.
They stop groping
most
you. They stop groping you. They grope the next girl.
Well, that's because that Lee J's wearing the cape. You know, they're worried about the cape. Anyway, well, yeah, but I agree with you, Louise. It's been my experience. I didn't ever have a groper. I had a rub up against her,
ew.
You know, kind of guy. Ooh, he'd reach for something
that's
and
slimier.
Brush you. Oh, anyway, and the minute you say, "Hey, what the? Knock it off!" They do. I mean,
yeah.
they're bullies
oh,
to
yeah.
a point.
Oh, yeah. They're being very direct with their hands, so you can be very direct with your words. Stop mm-hmm. it. Get off me. Get your hand out of my pants.
Or else I'm going to have my brother, husband, big fat
Or I'll
friend
have your wife do it.
Yeah. Well, no, he's a widower, so.
Oh,
you
all
know,
right.
here's the thing, just for technique. As soon as you say, stop it, that's not okay, that makes them stop. But if you threaten, it gives them something to argue with. As soon as you say, I'm going to have somebody come, you know, then they go, oh, yeah. And now they've got something that gives them something to talk back to you about. But if you just call them on it and leave it there
yeah.
and set the boundary,
yeah.
there's no answer they have.
No, because
oh, that's right.
Yeah, they've been told no by other women. Mm-hmm. You just have to be one of the women that have told them no so that they will stop groping you and move on and grope Aunt Janet. Because she might enjoy it.
Yeah, cause she is.
You know how
Let
she
her
is.
Let her make up her own mind.
You know how she is.
Hey, all this sex talk brings me to our
careful,
final.
Careful.
It brings me to my final funny. Yes, honey, I'll be right there.
Well, speaking of sex.
Yeah, no, this story is out of the Sandusky Register, and I just cannot let this program end without reading it to you. It's rather short. An Ohio man has admitted to climbing naked onto the back deck of his home and having, quote, sexual relations with a small round metal picnic table. Repeatedly.
That was Matt giggling. I want everyone to know. Yes. He can't contain himself.
Was it consensual?
Repeatedly. Yes.
Wait, how old is the picnic table?
At least 16, I hope.
It was a table with place for an umbrella to go in.
That sounds like a cute couple.
The married father of three said he would tilt the table on its side.
Ooh, that's hot.
Pleasure himself.
That is hot.
And then clean up.
Wait, he's admitted to it? I mean, it's not bad enough.
He's spotted.
He's telling, this is what I used to do.
Well, he's been spotted, I guess.
But here is the
by
problem
picnickers.
Here. he does it out on the deck, naked, and in full view of an elementary school.
Oh,
a confidential
no.
source gave the cops video that caught
man.
Mr. Price, is his name, in the act, not once, not twice, not three times, but four different times.
I mean, you can
so
get
he
a
is
picnic,
facing
you can get
some charges.
You can get the picnic table pregnant, and then you're really in trouble.
Took four times
then
until the price
chairs.
Was right.
What, Lee J?
It took four times until the price was right.
Ooh, wow.
But,
oh, this is it. This is.
Say goodnight, Gracie.
Goodnight, Gracie.
He's a couple sandwiches short of a picnic basket.
I get it.
I don't know what to say.
Oh, boy.
Are we done?
It takes all kinds.
Yeah, I think. What else? Right. I mean, where do we go after
that?
That
finished us off right there.
That finished
us off.
Thank you, Matt.
A happy ending.
All right. Well, thank you, Lee J. Berman. I can never say producer Trish. I always want to say producer Trish. Producer Trish, engineer Matt Sigman, and, of course, Diane Diamond on the East Coast. And with all of our callers and all of our emailers, thank you so much. And with that, Talk It Over is over.